This show is supported by State Farm. You have insurance for your home, your health, and your car. Why don't you have insurance for your small business? So many small business owners think they don't need or don't even know about small business insurance. Protecting a source of revenue is one thing, but so is protecting all of your hard work and your team members. State Farm agents are all small business owners too, so they know how to help small business owners choose personalized policies that fit their budgets. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hi folks, be sure to visit my website at dr-history.com for a short personal video message, to listen to the latest stories, and to leave a comment.
Right now, the silver-throated tones. What are you giggling about?
Silver-throated tones?
Well, something like that. Dr. History.
Good morning, Zeb.
How are you?
I'm great, great.
Sound like a warbler.
I do. Thank you. Oh, good week this week. I got all my kids coming, or most of them, and grandkids. And
good for you.
So it's going to be a good week.
But good for you.
I got to say hi to Stephanie, who, you know, we did a thing on rodeo clowns here a bit ago.
Yeah.
She has a cousin who was a barrel man in East Texas. His name was Lanky Lynn.
Lanky Lynn.
Does that sound familiar? He did it for years and years.
Lanky Lynn. I'm going to have to go check my records. The name doesn't hit me right now.
Okay.
But
she sent me some pictures, but they're on my computer, so I wasn't able to bring them to show you.
That's a clown's name.
Yeah, Lanky Lynn.
Lanky Lynn.
So he was.
Where's Lanky?
He was a genuine cowboy, barrel man, and bullfighter, and all that.
All right.
So, Zeb, a historic week this week. My book is almost ready to go to print. This week we get the manuscript to the printer with the maps, the illustrations, everything ready to print. So, folks, I'm hoping to have it in the next few weeks so you can have it for Christmas. And it's a historical novel. With starting with a young man who goes to work in a coal mine at age 11 over in Wales and eventually comes to America to become a cowboy. And so all the stories you've heard on this podcast, I've incorporated into this book.
Wow.
So, not all, but a lot of the true.
That's a big book.
That's a big book. So there's a lot of the true people, places, and events that you've heard here that will be in the book.
Oh, my goodness. Now, of course, I get a free signed copy.
Yeah, well, maybe a discount.
Nope.
We'll work something out.
Okay, thank you. Do you have any thank yous this week?
Well, Stephanie, she's written before, and thanks, Stephanie, for telling me about your cousin. So today we're going to talk about a place just not very far from us, Zeb, a place called King Hill.
Oh, yeah.
Just, what, 50, 60, 80 miles up the river from us?
Yeah, I bet you're going to tell me how it got its name.
No, I'm not.
Oh.
But I'm going to tell you about it.
Okay.
So picture this. It's the fall of 1908, and everybody's looking towards a spot where King Hill, Idaho, now stands. It was isolated. There weren't any trees, covered with sagebrush. But word had gone out that there was to be a land drawing and irrigation made available to settlers. So people came from all over, Pennsylvania, Illinois, back east, all
really?
Over. Yeah. But some state to put down roots on in this. At that time, Idaho was only about 18 years old. So it was just a young state. And there wasn't much over there. But the old Oregon Trail bore evidence of all the pioneers that passed right past there. A grandmother kept a diary of a covered wagon trek from Indiana to Oregon. And she wrote about the choking dust that was just like fine fine flour, you know, fine powder that just got in everything, your luggage, your food, everything. It was rough on those.
Yeah, it was tough.
On the Oregon Trail.
Yep.
So there's a story the day when one woman on a wagon train, in desperation, she sat down out in the open prairie and refused to go further.
She'd had enough.
She had had it. Her husband stopped the family wagon while the rest of the caravan kept going, leaving them. What do you do? Well, one of the leaders took a firm hand. He rode back to the lone wagon, ignoring the determined woman. He loaded her children and husband into their wagon and hurried it along to catch up with the others, leaving the woman still sitting on the prairie.
You're kidding.
Well, that's not the end of the story.
Oh.
No one was there to record what really happened.
They didn't want to record that.
Anyway, she jumped to her feet and ran to catch up with the train.
Really?
I guess she decided, you know, I don't want to go, but my family's leaving.
Can you imagine how kind of dicey it was around the old cook pot that night?
We better just leave that one alone.
No kidding.
So anyway, by 1908, transportation had improved, and the Oregon Short Line, now Union Pacific, brought pioneers to the King Hill land drawing. Railroad cars were left on a spur as living quarters for those who didn't have tents. The Henry Hafers, who owned land where the town was to be, could furnish bed and board for just a few people. So that was the extent of King Hill at the time. So prospective settlers lost no time in scattering out to look at the area and select choice spots. The land was blocked off into 40-acre parcels and plotted on a large outdoor chart. Now, some of the people were taken cross-country in an open buggy. Some of them walked or rode a horse. Those who took land were required by the Cary Act to establish a 30-day residence and build what they called a prove-up house. And it had to be at least 14 feet by 16 feet.
That's so, a house?
14 feet.
That sounds like a closet.
How big is this room, Zeb?
Probably 20 by at least 15.
Yeah, so smaller than this room.
Ooh.
That's the minimum that they had. And I'm sure a lot of them probably maybe a little bit bigger. But so the drawing took place on an outdoor platform with all the names thoroughly churned in a barrel. First name drawn was the guy named Hank Jones of Pittsburgh. Hank chose land across the Snake River. This is right along the Snake River, by the way.
Yeah.
Just to give you a perspective. So he chose some land across the Snake River that could only be reached by ferry, but later they did build a bridge across there. And as each name was called, that person chose the tract of land that they wanted from what was available. So if somebody chose something you had in mind, then you probably had Plan B, C, D, whatever, you know, of other plots that you could take.
Yeah.
This show is supported by State Farm. Insurance is a part of any solid financial plan. Making sure you have the important things in life covered is one of the best ways to give yourself a little breathing room when things go awry. It's important to protect not only your business, but yourself as a business owner and all current and future team members. State Farm agents know what it takes to run and protect a small business because State Farm agents are all small business owners and they live and work in your community. So they're deeply attuned to what's happening with other small businesses in your market. If you have a small business and are interested in making sure you're protected, reach out to your local State Farm agent to learn more about what you need. They'll help you find the right policy at the right price for your business. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
So this story comes from a lady by the name of Nellie Burgess. She was the 40th drawn. Her first choice had been taken by another person. So Nellie was then selected acreage right next to the Snake River, planning to get in some good fishing. So the Rainbow Ranch was born. That was her ranch.
Really?
She called it the Rainbow Ranch. And with the magic of a lot of hard work and loving care, the land was cleared and became a green, shady oasis. And that's true of the other ranchers.
Now, is some of that still here today?
You know, I don't know. But, you know, the town is still there, you know, so I'm sure some of these that started out as these just little 14 by 16 houses have blossomed into ranches, don't you think?
Yeah.
And farmhouses, you know, modern places. So, you know, it didn't happen fast there or easily. Had those at the land drawing been able to see the future, they might have boarded the next train home. Because, you know, when those first homesteaders came, it was rough.
Oh, man.
I mean, you know.
Were there a lot of trees and everything at that time down there? Where did they get the wood for their homes?
Well, that's a good question. They may have had to go up into the hills. You know, King Hill.
That'd be a pretty good.
Yeah, it'd be a ways, yeah. Right? Over into the North Hills over there towards Ketchum and Fairfield over there. But Nellie Burgess had left her desk at the Chicago Daily News to become a rancher. That's what she wanted to do. Single woman at that time.
Wow.
Anyway, a few necessities. Miss Burgess arranged for what she needed. Flaxie, a riding horse. She named Flaxie.
Uh-huh.
She needed a horse,
okay.
A .22 rifle,
uh-huh.
And a room at the Henry Hafer's Inn while her land was cleared and the prove-up house built. So I think they helped each other.
I see.
You know, the don't you think they...
Well, it sounds like she had a little money from her job.
She must have done.
Yeah.
And I think she, again, I think the neighbors, they all pitched in and helped each other. But one feature of her ranch was different. There was a built-in protection against possible nighttime marauders.
Nighttime marauders like
robbers.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Here's what she had. She had a trap door led to the attic bedroom where she slept. Above the opening, a box of black pepper was suspended so that if the trap door were pushed up, the person opening it would get a face full of black pepper.
That would be really uncomfortable.
It would. Anyway, she says, and that would give her time to grab that .22 rifle.
Yeah.
But she says the trap was never sprung. So she never had to use it.
Isn't that area over there, that's kind of a snaky thing, isn't it?
I think it would be.
Yeah.
I think there's, yeah, a few rattlers over there.
Yeah.
But anyway, the first thing she did after her land was cleared was to plant fruit and shade trees, which a lot of them did. And as soon as the apple tree started to bear, she used a pole to kind of keep it leaning right there. And as people went by, they could help themselves to her apples.
Really?
That's just the way people were, you know. And at first, water was carried by a bucket from the Snake River some 600 feet away to keep the trees alive. Now, how many buckets do you think it would take during the summer, 600 feet away?
And she carried all that?
She carried those buckets.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, it had to be a hardy stock, right?
Why didn't she hook her horse up to a cart?
Good question. Or why didn't she use the horse, put the buckets, I don't know.
See, now,
the buckets over
we should have been there helping her.
We should have been.
Yeah.
So, anyway, there was no danger running low on fuel because she said they burned sagebrush. And she said that some of their friends back at Chicago would write to her and some of her friends saying, could you get each of us a good-looking cowboy?
Oh, really?
And she wrote back and said she'd looked the situation over herself, and there were none.
I'll bet you. Do you have a picture of her?
I do not, but I've got some other pictures.
Because I was going to say, I'll bet she was a tough lady.
Okay, now here's a picture of King Hill during the drawing.
Oh.
Look at that.
That's it?
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, there's nothing there, hardly.
I guess not.
I mean, not much.
Now, that's on the old highway, right?
Yeah, yeah, okay. Just off the freeway up there.
Right.
Anyway, Nellie tells of riding into the mountains for chokecherries and wild meat. And she says, once when my nephew Glenn Mills was along, we lost our way and ran low on food. Finally, there was only a bit of pancake flour left and no grease to fry cakes in. So Glenn went out and shot a squirrel, and we used his fat to fry pancakes. When we finally found our way out of the forest and the mountains, we were near the town of Soldier, which became Fairfield.
Oh.
Okay. I didn't.
They were a long way.
They were a long way. Yeah.
Holy
so, folks,
cow.
Just so you know, if you went between Twin Falls and Sun Valley, Fairfield would be to the west about, halfway between Sun Valley and Twin Falls?
Yeah.
Probably, 30 miles
probably.
West of there.
And they did all that horseback.
Yeah. Yeah. So the two, they made their way to this town called Soldier, which I didn't know that, which became Fairfield. The two tied their horses in front of a restaurant and hurried in for a big meal. And having made short work of it, another was ordered just like the first. They ordered everything on the menu, then started over again.
No.
They must have been hungry.
Well, you go back to Soldier, so you're saying the Soldier Mountain ski area was named after...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they're called the Soldier Mountains, right?
Yeah, right.
I used to go elk hunting up in that area,
I see.
Soldier Mountains. So anyway, most King Hill ranchers rushed to put in gardens. That very first spring after the drawing, there were large, big, huge watermelon, just as there are today, because it's kind of down low where, kind of like Hagerman, isn't it, where they can grow watermelons and cantaloupe, things like that. So... there she was in her Rainbow Ranch. And one of the first cooperative projects of the settlers was the building of Union Church. Pastors were supplied by the various denominations. On the whole, this arrangement was quite satisfactory, with ranchers willing to give a bit where their religion was concerned in order to have a church in the community. And one of the newly converted insisted on baptism by immersion. The congregation obligingly moved down by the Snake River in a crowd, and one little boy, thinking ahead, took his fishing pole along.
Uh-oh.
Because, hey, if you're going to have a baptism in the river, just well catch fish
you're
or two.
Fishing for fish and souls.
Right. Saving souls and catching fish. Anyway, so at Nellie's Rainbow Ranch, when there was company, going to church had to be what they called the ride and tie method. Now, I'd never heard of this, Zeb, because there was only one horse. One person rode a mile, then tied the horse up for the person following. Then they walked on a mile. The person behind got on the horse. They rode a mile, tied the horse up, and they would leapfrog that way. To get to church.
There was no Uber?
There was no Uber.
Uber.
Flaxie the Uber. There was the horse. Yeah, you might like this one. Lloyd. Lloyd was a pig. A real pig.
I see.
Was bought by Nellie because of a constant yearning for fresh pork. Idaho was a sheep state with some wild game and occasional sturgeon. We'll talk about that.
Yeah.
But at the Rainbow, there was long conversations about the golden brown pork chops with gravy and spicy sausage.
Ooh.
To trim the pancakes. Lloyd must have been a mind reader, because one day when he was let out of his pen for exercise, he made a wild dash for freedom and the Snake River.
And what
Lloyd
happened?
Was taken off. Oh, here's what Nellie said.
Okay.
We scrambled after him as fast as we could, fearing that he would fall in the Snake River and drown. But Lloyd had vanished. As we stood forlornly by the river, a log came floating by in the swift current. As it neared us, it suddenly flapped its ears and swam to the other side.
That was Lloyd?
Lloyd. Lloyd was alive. He was alive. But he swam to the other side of the river.
I see.
Now, I didn't know pigs could swim.
I'm not a pig expert.
I'm not either. I don't know if they swim, but evidently Lloyd could. So here's what she said. But now another hazard appeared across the river. There was a railroad, and on that railroad, a crew of section hands was working.
Uh-oh, look out.
Now, these men were as good and honest as the day is long, but pork chops are pork chops.
Absolutely.
We had to hurry. A neighbor offered to take us around to hunt the pig, so we drove down across the bridge, several miles up to the rugged road, opening two gates to the beach. We searched in the brush, calling. Lloyd suddenly appeared from a shady clump, and we prepared for another foot race. But here he merely walked to the river, plunged in again, and swam back to his pen, which is where we found him.
He went back on the other side of the river?
He swam back to the other side.
What year was this, by
1908.
In 1908.
1909, yeah,
wow.
Right in there. Anyway, when fields and orchards became productive, wildlife moved in to help harvest crops. Jackrabbits nibbled the alfalfa. Coyotes chose prunes. Porcupines preferred apples. Pack rats liked eggs. Magpies joined the pack rats in robbing hens' nests. But she said California quail, Orioles and sage hens made for a really good Sunday dinner.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, I didn't know you could eat, Orioles. I don't know.
There's not much there, is there?
Well, probably not.
Are you talking Baltimore Orioles?
I don't know. Oh. So the Snake River was good fishing. There was, and she liked to fish.
Yeah, she did.
So she says, I kept hearing tales of huge sturgeons, but didn't exactly believe them. Then one day I was quietly fishing. There was a splash as though a horse had jumped off the cliff behind me into the river.
That's not a splash.
The sight of a horrible monster in the water so near my feet set me in reverse and fast.
Holy
so a big
cow.
Old sturgeon had obviously just jumped right next to her.
Wow.
So now her nephew, Glenn Mills, later pulled out a 400-pound sturgeon. Let me show you.
You got a picture of it there?
I do.
Wow.
Okay.
Holy moly, that's a big fish.
Yeah. So anyway, he pulled out a 400-pounder with the help of a team of horses.
Wow.
And I can remember seeing pictures down
Flaxie
here.
Flaxie was eating hay, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Down here at Hagerman,
yeah.
You know, there's pictures of 400, 500, 600-pound sturgeon being pulled out by teams of horses. But a few years afterward, Glenn hooked another sturgeon early Easter morning, just about time to leave for church. Well, he postponed the landing, letting the big fish go back into the deep hole where it was still hooked. After church, Glenn told the reverend that he had a sturgeon hooked, though he wasn't sure he should, it being Sunday. Not sure if he was going to break the Sabbath by pulling in this sturgeon. Well, the pastor said, quote, the Bible says, go thou and do likewise, doesn't it? In other words, go get the fish. Go get the fish. And Catherine Mills, his daughter, was given the honor of pulling in the sturgeon. Her dad had hooked. An 80-pound girl landed an 80-pound fish.
Oh, my goodness.
Pulled it in.
I've only got a minute left.
Okay, we're about done here. 1958, King Hill, population 350. That was in 1958. Had his 50th birthday. There was a banquet with special table with honored guests. Trees have grown tall, green. There's a lot of ranches now. Neighbors still far apart, but, you know, the homes. I haven't actually been to King Hill.
Oh, I have.
Have you?
Yeah.
But there's nice homes and ranches and
good folks
farms.
Over there.
Yeah.
Good folks.
Well, they come from good stock, right?
And Flaxie is out eating alfalfa.
Flaxie is, I think,
but watch out.
For Lloyd.
Lloyd, yep. He'll jump in the water.
Thanks to State Farm for supporting this show and helping our listeners protect their businesses and lives. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.